tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Common Ground, the place where you get real conversations, real connections, and absolutely no filter. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good day to you. Hope everybody's fine out there. My guest that I'm going to have on right now. I remember when I first met this young lady. She was very young, right? She was very young at the time. Probably, I think, fresh out of high school. We met in, in Iraq, very first time I met her. So, at the time, you know, I was like a sergeant. I had soldiers underneath me. But at the time, she was not my soldier. And my supervisor, right? Don't get me wrong, he was a good guy still. But he was like a white guy. So, you know, this young black girl coming from a different part of the world, different part of the country. And, you know, sometimes in the military, sometimes white leadership sometimes don't really know how to really deal with young black people there. So since I'm a black guy, right, he came up to me and said, Harris, man, I need to take her under your wings. And I took this young lady under my wings. We speak, and the whole time that I've been with this young lady throughout my military career, throughout the time we were together, she's always been like a good soldier, a good person, a hard worker. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I'm introducing Jamisha Stokes.
Everybody.
Hey, how you doing, my friend?
I'm fine. How are you?
All right, I'm doing good though, man. I'll tell you something. It's been a while since we spoke. You know, yeah. I've been following you on TikTok, and I gotta be honest with you, you be motivating me.
Thank you.
I'm serious though. You working out? I'm like, damn. You know, I feel lazy right now. I'm retired. I need to get back in the gym or something. Mm-hmm.
You better get it
now. Yes, ma'am. You're right. You're absolutely right. So, how have you been?
I've been good. You know,
been good. Good. How's your mental health right now?
Actually, I'm in remission. I'm in full remission. So right now, I'm on the up and up with my health. So far, so good. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, man. Thanks. That's a great thing. And we're gonna actually get into that a little bit later. Okay. I appreciate that so much. So I'm gonna get started with the first question. So can you start by telling me where you were born and where were you raised at?
I'm born and raised in Chicago, Illinois.
Chi-town. So how was Chi-town? How was it like growing up?
I lived up north, so I was in a gang affiliate neighborhood. Most of my family members were gang members. So to me, I had a great upbringing. I think it was great.
Okay. Got you. So you say I just talk about your great upbringing. So tell me what was it like? What was great for you? Was it because like family dynamics and everything, your mom and stuff like that?
Yes, I would say the neighborhood dynamics. In my neighborhood, I'm from Howard Street, so mostly all our parents went to school together. So we all went to school together. So it's like a big, huge family, you can say.
Okay. So they used to always say it takes a village, right?
Yes.
It takes a village. And that's one thing I think to me is missing today. You know what I mean? The family dynamic, the person don't have to be your family. But guess what, though? No matter what happens, they're going to have your dad come back. You know what I mean? Yes. You'll be that little bad little kid out there. I said, look, I'm going to tell your mama. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I get it, man. I get it. So how would you describe your childhood, right? Your childhood home, right? Siblings and stuff like that.
Well, I live with my mom and my little brother. We're 10 years apart.
Okay.
So it was just us in the house.
Okay. All right. So that's good stuff. Okay. So what values, right, were instilled in you growing up as a young child?
So my mom had childhood diabetes. So my mama always told me that to help others and to be kind. So my mom always told me, like, what you put out in this world is what you get. So
I got you. You see that? That's the smile on your face. That's your mom. That's your heart right there. You see that? You know what I'm saying? I'll tell you right now. Moms, to me, are the blessing. You know what I mean? Because I see, like, when I was young, too, and what my mom did, and I was a knucklehead kid growing up. and my mother, they were all there. The show was always there, cussing me out when I mess up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I get it, man. So, okay, so the values, right? So what kind of influence did your parents have on your life, like your mom, your dad, and everything?
My father really wasn't in my life till I got older, but my mom always loved education. My mom always instilled in me that if you didn't have education, you didn't have nothing in the world. She said, no matter what race, you know, education take you where conversations can. So that's what.
Yeah, I agree with that, right? Knowledge is power, and you're going to learn. So you can also teach the next generation as well. Yes. So, okay, I know you talk about your siblings, right? What role did your family dynamics, right, play in shaping you as a person now?
I was the oldest. I'm always the oldest. My older sister died, so I was the oldest. Yeah. So I think that shaped me to be a natural born leader because I was just used to taking care of people. So,
gotcha. Do you mind? I don't know about this. You say your older sister passed?
Yeah.
Do you mind talking about it? That's too hard.
Oh no, it's good. She passed away. I was only 1 year old. She was 3. She passed away in a car accident. She was buckled in, and then an 18-wheeler actually hit our vehicle, and she flew out the window. So.
Oh man, and you was in the vehicle too?
Yes.
Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I know it's a long time ago, but it's still sad. You know what I mean? Sorry to hear this. I'm very sorry to hear that, really. So, was there an early experience that made you who you are today? Like we just talked about just now? Anything else that made you who you are today?
Yes. I think, I guess actually having to take care of my mom and seeing her, you know, go through so much adversity as a child kind of made me grow up a little faster. So, I think that made me more knowledgeable.
Okay. I got you. So, now... your military, right? What inspired you now to join the military?
I wasn't inspired to join the military. I was actually in trouble.
You were in trouble?
Yeah, I wasn't a troublemaker.
Uh-huh.
But I was.
You sure you weren't a troublemaker? You sure?
I wasn't a troublemaker on paper, but I was.
Okay.
So I was actually recruited from college, from Chicago State University.
Okay.
The recruiter told me that I can get $40,000, and I said, why not? And I signed up on the dotted line.
I get it, man. I know back in those days, you know what I mean? A lot of people get, especially during the height of the Iraq War,
mm-hmm.
a lot of young soldiers were getting a lot of great bonuses back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So how were you then when you enlisted, and what branch did you serve?
I was 18, and I went in the Army. I was National Guard at first.
Okay. You National Guard?
Yeah, I was National Guard, but when I met you guys in 60 up, I had just went active.
Okay. So how old were you then when you went active duty? Were you still 18 or 19?
I was 19.
You were 19? Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was when you first got to boot camp, right? I knew how it was for me. I was nervous. I was older. I was 29 when I joined. So mm-hmm. I was nervous as hell. Could barely do a push-up.
Mm-hmm.
How was it for you?
And man, it was a culture shock from them picking us up from the airport, taking phones, yelling. I was like, oh no, I'm going back home. Like, it was horrible from the, especially when you get, you know, like to reception, like actual to your fob, and you got to put your head down in a bus. Yeah. They yelling. I was the first one, so I failed. So everybody trampled over me to get out on the pad. Oh, it was horrible. Oh man.
Hey, I'm gonna tell a quick story, right? Remember after we got off the bus, we had a big old duffel bag and rucksack, whatever. And the drill sergeant came up to us, right? And drill sergeant said, beat your face. I look at him, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I don't know what the hell that crap mean. Mm-hmm. Beat your face? What do you mean? And then he got my face like this. He said, drop! Boy, that scared the heck out of me, man. When the damn dude got on my damn face. I remember. Yes, ma'am. So can you describe, right? Your role in the military and what a typical day looked like for you?
Well, I was a big ammo dog. Y'all know the best MOS, 89 Bravo.
89 Bravo.
So I pretty much worked at either the ammunition supply point, where that's where the military holds all the ammo for each base. I issued classified ammunition all the way from E3 to E6.
Okay. You're right, though. I did... you know, although when I did your job, I was a cook. I mean, I'm still a cook when I was in, but being a cook and then come and do your job. Actually, when I was there, I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? I enjoyed it. I called the ammo.
That's great. I forgot you was a cook. I forgot.
Yeah. Oh, the cook, man. Right? And then when I learned so much, like the Dodak, you know what I mean? The different ammunition and the Dodak was another number.
The lot number, right?
Yeah. So I got so good at it. I'll at least the last four, I knew by heart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work though, man. A lot of tedious work.
Yes, man.
Cause I remember one time some Air, I don't know if you remember this, some Air Force took like a whole bunch of ammo, and when they were leaving Iraq, they dropped all the ammo back off. It took us days to count all the deck of ammo. Remember that?
Yeah.
Man, and I can't remember who was in charge, but they were mad. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of tedious job counting the ammo, putting it back together, restocking them to how they're supposed to be. It's a lot of work, but those type of jobs, you appreciate those jobs though, because you know they teach you time management. You know what I mean? And how to actually really work and paying attention to detail a lot. You know what I mean? They, that was great. I loved it when I did it. Yes. So what were some of the biggest challenges you faced during your time in service?
Being in 82nd, that was my biggest challenge, as being a staff sergeant, African-American female, in a predominantly white male brigade. And then I was the ammo tech. So I was in the E7 position.
Wow.
So I was training all people under me. I was getting all the NCOs together, and it was rough. It was rough. That was rough.
So explain to me though, and how about you being on like black female, right, with a lot of white leadership? How did they treat you back then?
Oh,
how did they talk to you?
I was with a CAV unit 373. We was on deployment. I ended up getting sent back home off that deployment, and then I ended up coming back. They let me come all the way back to the States. And then I went on another deployment a week later with another company to be a TOC NCO. So, I was a TOC NCO with CAV. That's why I got sent back, because actually the Command Sergeant Major Murray, who got the biggest, coverage, as a TOC command, you see all the screens, and some stuff came up. So unfortunately it was fraternization, and I was told that I put it up. So yeah. I got kicked out. Nobody believed me, nothing, because I was an African-American female. Turns out a Caucasian female who was an E3 did a sworn statement. She had footage and pretty much told everything. And then, I was giving back the respect a little bit, you know?
You said someone get kicked out. What do you mean?
I got sent back to the rear. So,
okay. Okay, because when you kick your people and think you probably got kicked out of the military, which that never happened,
I got an honorable discharge. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got kicked out. Oh, no, but I kicked out from that deployment, and then I went back.
Got you. Yeah, so I understand those, because the whole time I was in, I was always afraid to go to the 82nd. I've had plenty of opportunities to go. Well, you know what, why I was afraid? Because they run too dagger much. Did they run a lot there?
To be honest, No. And I can't run. Everybody know I thought of every run, everything. I hated running. I never act like I was the top runner. Push up, sit up, got it. Run, you can see me later. But the pace was so slow, you would have did it. Like, you do that in your sleep. Like, their pace is like a 10-minute pace, seriously. Like, it's really not. For males, it's not that. Like, the males were fine.
Got you. So how often, how many times you got deployed with them?
I deployed with 82nd twice.
Twice? Okay. And both times to Iraq, right?
No, we went to Afghanistan.
Afghanistan?
Back to Kandahar.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Oh, wow. So
I even saw some of my ammo cans that I sprayed my name on.
You did? What? That's crazy, though, man. Yeah. That is so crazy. I know you're talking trash. Oh, man. Oh, man. So how many times total did you get deployed? How many times you got deployed total?
I deployed four total.
Four times?
Mm-hmm. I deployed two with 60th, remember, to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to Afghanistan.
Got you. So how long did you serve, right? And what made you decide to transition out?
I served 12 years total, and I was forced out, unfortunately, due to my stage three, pretty much like almost stage four breast cancer. So I had to get out the military, unfortunately.
I understand that. So besides, you know, we're going to get into that a little more often. I mean, a little bit later. But when you got medical discharge, right? Mm-hmm. How did you feel? Because I know you probably wanted to do 20 years, right?
Yeah, but I was excited. Once I got the opportunity, I ran to go sign it. I was happy. I was ready to get out. I didn't like the culture, the way the military was turning. So I was glad to get out.
Yeah. You know, though, when you bring that up, you know, one thing I've noticed too, at least my last few years in, how the Army was, to me, was kind of getting kind of soft a little bit.
It was the worst.
Yeah, it was. And you know how back when I came in, how like the first sergeants used to run the company, mm-hmm. were like in charge. But it seemed like these captains, although the captain's company, but it seemed like the first sergeant like relinquishing their power to the Dagger commanders, man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like making them look weak. That's how I feel. But before I left, what do you think?
It's definitely true because I watched, you know, females get the cry about, you know, oh, my feelings hurt because the NCO yelled at me, but not saying like, hey, you missed movement, you know, for deployment. We had to confine, you know, like they never tell the story, but I watched NCOs get, I mean, kicked out over out like accusation that wasn't true, not sexual, just anything regular. It's like, they're so soft now, like even yelling, I feel like not trying to be funny, but I needed that kind of discipline as a young female coming in the military, especially coming from Chicago. Yeah. And I feel like that's what brings the military, make it special, is that discipline we have. So yeah. I remember like when we go into the motor pool, we used to run from y'all. Like we used to hide and try not to, you know, get seen of not doing nothing because you get smoked or whatever. But now on social media, you see them doing TikToks all day on vehicles.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. Cardi B. I don't know if you saw what Cardi B said one time about when the time I bring back the draft or whatever. Cardi B said the TikTok soldiers.
Yeah.
That's so dang funny. You're so right, though, man, because, and that's what the Army is really going to today, because it really bothers me, you know, because sometimes I think, and not only just the soldiers alone, but some leadership too, like, damn, if I have to go back to war, I could go to war with some of these people and they might get you killed. You know what I mean? That should all be on my mind sometimes. So I get it, man. So what are some of the lessons, right, or habits from the military that still stick with you today?
Unfortunately, it's the discipline. Mm-hmm. Being a civilian was a very hard transition for me. I didn't understand the culture of the civilians, which I mean the culture is like when you go to a job, like boom, in the Army. When you meet somebody, you meet 30 new people. You don't even know these people, but we best friends now. Like, I know your whole family, you know mine. I'm picking up your kids with you. But in the civilian world, it's like a dog-eat-dog world. Like, it was like that in the Army, but I've never seen so much mean people. Like, I could come to work. You know, I run with kids with autism, so I run around acting silly all day. But it's like people be so mean off the wake-up. Like, you're like, good morning. They be like, oh, shut up. You be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the culture, like I feel like civilians feel like they're so entitled sometimes.
Yeah.
When they don't either have the qualifications or even the experience to want that respect. Like I just feel like they just feel like everything is owed to them. And I think the military taught me that you have to work for everything because I worked for every rank I got. So I feel like everybody should do the same. That's why I don't be understanding sometimes like how they operate. But I do appreciate the military for giving me that discipline and being able to hold my tongue and watch what I say.
Yeah, cause I know. I remember when you. That's why they gave me to you because they couldn't handle you.
Yeah,
they couldn't handle it. The white supervisor couldn't handle this young black kid from Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Trust me. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know what I mean? But hey, but me, I ain't lying to you. When I first met you, my damn spirit took you anyway because I knew how to deal with you. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Every time we used to talk all the time. You know what I mean? And yep. I always like I was
like, we used to like, oh man, here come Harris, run, run, run.
Yeah.
Like, look, well, we respected you because you actually worked with us. So we respect.
I appreciate that. Yes, man, I appreciate that though, man. And that's one thing I do miss about the military though, is the camaraderie, especially when you're overseas, mm-hmm. the camaraderie that you have amongst the soldiers. You know what I mean? When you're away from your family, sometimes you might be mad. You might cuss each other one day, but guess what though? You are still friends. You are still gonna have each other back.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, I miss that, man. Okay, so we're gonna go on to another topic. Okay, it might be a little rough right now. Okay, so if you don't mind, we're gonna discuss a little bit about this. So, can you take me back to the moment you found out you had breast cancer?
I was at Womack. It was during the Michael hurricane we had in North Carolina, real bad. And I remember crying to one of my LTs because the main provider did. I had a cyst on my chest, a big lump. So I went in a sick call, of course. They said it was a cyst. They gave me antibiotics. During the storm, everything shut down. But unfortunately, it was burning. It was hurting real bad. So I had to go in. And that LT got in trouble and took the risk of actually sending me to go get my mammogram, to go get seen immediately.
So when you said the LT got in trouble?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they told me that I didn't have any family members who have cancer or anything. So, I was always healthy, never had any problems. They were like, oh, we would have found out in your blood if you had cancer or anything. So they was like, it's just a cyst. Oh, get over it. And I'm just like, this is not, something's not right. I don't feel right. I feel like it's something I really want to get help. And they was like, oh, you're being dramatic, go back to work. And I'm just like, hey, something's wrong. And then I literally cried to that LT and he was like, forget it. Like he did it.
Yeah. Wow. So I listened to that story. Well, I remember one time matter of fact, my last podcast, right? I talked about how black women a lot of times get misdiagnosed.
Yep.
When it comes to a lot of things that's really happening. So thank you for highlighting that so much. You know what I mean? I hope people see this and really paying attention. You know, it's not just happening in the regular world. It happened in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's real sad. How a double call to get over it. You see what I'm saying? How are you going to be in pain?
Yeah, it was too spicy.
Yeah, I understand that, man. So the LT did respect the LT for doing what? You know what I'm saying? It's a he, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Respect the lieutenant for doing what he's supposed to do. You see what I'm saying? And that's a blessing that you called. Yeah, he called it early. I'm assuming, and that's a blessing right there. You know what I mean? I think so what was the early sign? I know you discussed this a little bit, right? So, but what was the early signs and symptoms that led you to seek medical help?
So I actually missed a lot of signs, to be honest. Mm-hmm. When I was on deployment, I had leakage from my nipples. I had nipple rings, so I thought it was just, because how the water out there be nasty or whatever.
Yeah.
But knowing that's the actual first stages of breast cancer, you start leaking white, milky-looking fluid from your nipples, which you can make think you're lactating. But, my daughter was big, so I shouldn't have been lactating. But the lump was the final straw for me, and that's why I think my cancer was so far, because I had it for a while. It was just dominant.
Mm, got you. And how did your military experience help you to prepare you mentally or emotionally for that battle?
I would think just the support of my chain of command, from me finding out, getting that call, you need to come in. I got support from my Lieutenant Colonel and my Sergeant Major.
Okay, good. So they had your back.
Yeah, they were like my mom and dad. They went in like mom and dad mode. It was no more, this is Staff Sergeant Stokes who's going to go to the, who's up for the E7 board. This is, we need to help her. We know her family is far. She has a kid. Mm-hmm. So I, to this day, thank them every day.
Got you. And what kept you going, right? You just talked about it, the Sergeant Major, during the toughest time, tougher parts of your treatment?
I would just say all my battle buddies and my daughter. I didn't have my daughter at the time. She was very young. So I used to pass out a lot. A lot of my battle buddies had to watch her. My commanders had to watch her because I had a lot of surgeries and I'll be out of it, for 2 weeks sick. Mm. So yeah, I think that was just it. That was it. I wouldn't have got it. I wouldn't have made it without the support of my daughter.
Got you. You know what? There's one thing I say about when it comes to military. I know they have a bad side too, but the good part too is the camaraderie that we spoke about earlier. The battle buddies, the good battle buddies that you have. Mm-hmm. When people in crisis, people to step in. They step in and they help you because they know you that you're in crisis. You know what I mean? And I think that's a really great thing about the military. I do miss. So, how was surviving, right, breast cancer change your perspective on life?
It changed a lot because my cancer actually is metastasis, so I still have cancer in my body, just not active. But it made me think about life in a different way because I did have to plan my funeral. The Army made me a will. I had to plan everything out from what people was going to wear, what they were going to eat. So that was pretty hard, you know, to realize I might not be here with my daughter anymore. So that was a big challenge for me. Like knowing this might be it. So now I do appreciate life more because to be honest, I really just got out of the dream of that, you know, I might die because of cancer. I'm not on the safe side. So now I can see the future. So I definitely take every day for full effect. Like I don't take a day for granted because, you know, a couple years ago, tomorrow wasn't promised for me.
Wow. I understand that. And what advice would you give to another woman facing a similar diagnosis?
I would tell them never give up. This road is hard. It's a hard road. And I'm not going to say it's a cookie cutter because it's not, but I can tell you don't give up because it is brighter on the other side.
Gotcha. So would you also tell them to like maybe to go check? Let me ask you this, right? How old do you think a woman should be for them to go in to get their mammogram? What age do you think they should start?
Unfortunately, I think they don't let you do it until you're like in your 40s or after menopause, like I think 38. But to me, honestly, I recommend women to just say, hey, I want a mammogram at 21 because I've actually, I'm a breast cancer advocate. So I speak to a lot of cancer patients. So I walk them through the chemos and all that. And I have a lot of people, teenagers who are 13, teenagers who are 16, who carry the genetic gene. But their family members, you know, carry it too, but they just got exposed first, you know? So it's like, it can happen at any age. I would say if you feel any lumps, any leakage, or you just don't feel right, go get checked. Believe, because you know your body, so.
I agree 100%. So, okay, so onto a different topic now. Tell me about your business, right? What do you do and what inspired you to start it?
So right now, I am currently a Master Fitness trainer. I do train the youth. I train everybody, elderly. I train them all. What inspired me to do it, I know after my cancer, like what kept me really moving was the gym. No matter, you know, like how weak I feel, I just know in the gym, I could just keep building. And it pushed me to, you know, keep going. So I feel like I use the gym to help other people going through whatever they may go through to say like, hey, you know, you can find
it. Got you. So as a master fitness trainer, how long is each your class each time you do it?
So it depends, but normally like an hour, hour and a half, because you know, you got the warm up and the cool down. And then I do talk normally a little bit after it. But yeah, it's like an hour and a half, but I normally do like cardio, like HIIT. So you get like a full workout.
Okay. If you don't mind talking about it for people that's listening. So you're still in Chicago right now, right? You're back in Chicago, right? So like if somebody wanted to come to your class right now, how much is there like a website they could go to or anything?
I actually have my links everywhere on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. It's Jane Renee Fitness. You can just type it in the websites. Everything will pop up when you just type the name in the search. But in Chicago, I do have flyers posted out on Eventbrite for my upcoming classes. So they can just search my name and it'll come up.
Okay,
and the
perfect.
Classes range from like 5, 10. It just depends on what kind of class I'm hosting at the time.
Gotcha. And how did you make the transition from military life to entrepreneurship?
The military. What's that class we do? ACAP.
ACAP,
you know, I actually took advantage of the business class and I did the women's business entrepreneurship course through, I think it was Bank of America paid for us, so from Cornell. So I did that. And then the military set me up with the SBA. Like they just pretty much helped me. So I just took full advantage of it.
Oh, okay, the SBA. So explain. Yeah. I was thinking about something like that. How did I work with the SBA loan with the military, through the military?
It's easy. So I know women, we have definitely a special grant just for us. Women's veterans, they have a program, a mentorship. It's in each state. All you got to do is go on the website and go to the bottom, and it'll tell you like different like subjects, and it'll be like women's veterans business. They have grants for African Americans, you know what I'm saying? Like, because you're Caribbean, they have stuff like that. Like, it's out there, but you know, you only get one time to use it. So I haven't actually used my loan yet because I want a big, you know, training center. So I'm actually waiting, but it's really easy, to be honest. But you do need a 580 credit score. But if you got that, you can get an easy 20K, easy.
Okay. You know, I'm going to actually look into that. You know, I'm moving. I'm in Georgia right now. And eventually I'm moving to Colorado. So, you know, I'm tired of working for people. I want to start my own business, man. My own business.
I'm telling you, go on the website. It's so much. And it helps you. Like, even if you just, like, go on there and they're checking, like, oh, I'm a veteran. I have a business. I need help. I promise you. They, like, them people get your number and everybody in your state start contacting you. And they be, like, agents from the banks and all. Wells Fargo, Bank of America. So, they got you. And I'll actually send you a link.
Yeah, please do. Thank you. I really appreciate that, because I'm thinking about doing that, something different. Because, you know, I've been writing books and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I really want to get my stuff out there. You know what I mean? I'm thinking about maybe one day, maybe open a bookstore or something. Do something.
Yes, you know what I mean? Quiet. You always like to be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Say it again.
I said you always wanted us to be quiet. We was always too loud. So yeah, I'm out there to do it for you.
Say it again. You're right about that. I'm like, damn, come on, Stokes, man. Shoot. Yeah. Your own girl. What's her name? Huh?
Worthy.
How's she doing?
She's doing good. She has her master's too.
Oh yeah.
All of us have like a master's degree now. Actually, the whole crew.
Wow. I'm telling you right now, that's like a blessing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Trust me, man. And despite of like how sometimes the military could be, I always try to encourage people joining, because that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Well, me too. I don't regret it at all. Yeah. No matter. I went through, I would do it all over again.
I agree with that 100% because the military changed my life drastically. Mm-hmm. A good thing, yeah. So what role, right, does fitness play in your life today?
It's my motivation. I literally get up at 3 o'clock in the morning every day to go to the gym. If I don't go to the gym, that's like my mental health medicine. And I got a lot of disorders, so I get a little cuckoo if I don't get my gym. So gym is life.
Got you. Yeah, I understand that. I've been wanting to. I remember when I left the Army, I said, look, I would never run again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I've been wanting to do again. I did for a minute, though, right? I used to get up early, like 5 in the morning to go to the gym. And then went to Jamaica back in August. that's poor the hell. I was like, damn. When I came back, man, I got lazy.
I got to take it, man. I got to go try the KFC
out there. For real? The KFC? Oh, Jamaica? What the hell? Why?
They say it's the best KFC in the world.
I don't know about all that, man. I never tried it in Jamaica.
I don't know. They said for some reason that food out there, like that KFC, they say is the best. Everybody go there just for it. I'm telling you.
Wow. I never knew that. I didn't find out. I should talk to my cousin. Call
out. I just go on TikTok.
Huh?
Go on TikTok. Put in Jamaica chicken.
I'm going to do that. I'm all places. KFC? They don't talk about like the curry chicken or the curry golden, nothing.
Yeah, what I'm saying, okay, because I'm trying to go to somebody auntie house. I don't want to go to the restaurant. I want to go to somebody's house who's cooking the big old. That's who I want to go to with a little foil with a little thing on top. That's where I want to go.
Yeah, exactly. When I was there, man, I'm telling you, they spoiled the hell out of us. Me and my wife.
Oh.
They spoiled us. Been cooking for us and every day and thing. We were there for like 7 days, and for the 7 days, I felt refreshed. Like, but my mind, I wasn't stressed at nothing. Just relax. You know what I mean? Yes, ma'am. So now, how do you balance being a business owner and prioritizing your health?
A planner. I do have ADHD, so everything I do is on a planner. I make sure I do go to the gym. I make sure now that, you know, I do have a time to take a deep breath, you know, just even to go pray, you know, talk to somebody if I need to let something out. So I do prioritize actually, you know, putting myself first.
Got you. And I'm telling you right now, and I'm glad you said that. You have to put yourself first, because if you don't put yourself first, how are you going to take care of other people? You know what I mean? You got to make sure you're taken care of first. So I think that's a great, great thing for people to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what are some of the core values behind your business?
Honesty. Mm-hmm. Loyalty.
Okay.
Integrity and faith.
Gotcha. And do you have, is it just you by yourself or you have employees working with you? Just you? Okay. And with your business, right? Do you, is it like Monday through Friday thing, or do you also do it on the weekends as well?
I do it on the weekends as well. I just have a calendar. So whatever they book me for or whatever I host is on there.
Okay, I got you. And what have been some of the biggest wins and setbacks in your entrepreneurial journey?
The biggest wins, I guess I got a big fan base now. It even excites me because I have a lot of Nigeria and Ghana.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm actually excited, yes. I actually have like a lot of people who actually know who I am, the little Chicago girl. A lot of setbacks, I would say, as being a certified master fitness trainer, of course, we got AI now. You got the influencers, who getting body shots and BBL saying they're getting a butt in 30 days. So it makes it hard for us actual real trainers to get people to actually stay with us because they're used to the false dreams that social media gave them. So Right. That's the setback of actually, I actually tell people like, I'm sorry, but that goal is not realistic. You know, I can help you get here, but we are definitely not getting that goal in 90 days. Like, you're not going to lose 60 pounds in 90 days. Like, it's just, I tell you the hard truth. So some people don't like to hear that.
Yeah, that's true. Right? And I agree with that. You got to let the people know whether they want to hear it or not. You know what I mean? Because it takes time if I want to lose the weight or get a big old butt. It takes time, mm-hmm. right? You know what I mean? And it's safer that way to really exercise it and work on the part that you want to get right.
Yep.
Save it that way, right? So yep. Do you have like hours? What are the hours to you? Doesn't matter to your gym or whenever you're training?
Start, because I actually train. I cohabit, so I do train at Club 33 in Old Town, Chicago. Mm-hmm. So her hours are from 8 to 7 p.m. So but everything is by schedule. So I schedule everything out.
Gotcha. So now, what are the top three lessons you want to pass on to the young people today?
Always believe in yourself. Never let anyone put their fear on your dreams. And always remember you're important.
That's really good advice, though, for real, because everybody is important and you got to think about you, make sure you're good. You know what I mean? So you can be there for your loved one as well. But you got to make sure that you are okay first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So let's go back a little bit about like mental health, right? Do you have any advice to tell people about what to do if they're feeling any kind of like anxiety or anything? Do you have any advice to tell
people? Yeah, I've been through it all. Anxiety, depression, bipolar, PTSD. I know one thing I can say is ask for help. It's okay to ask for help because you don't want to make a permanent decision off of a temporary problem. I know me personally, I've tried to commit suicide twice. Luckily, I did fail when I was going through my cancer treatments. But, I had a lot of good people in my corner that let me know, like, hey, it's okay to be vulnerable. Like, I had that hard shell that I built in the military because I always had to be tough around the males. I had to learn like, hey, it's okay to get help. It's okay to say I'm not okay. So I would definitely tell people like, go get help or just talk to somebody because it's always somebody who is listening. Like I know me personally, if they're veterans, I do have a veterans podcast now and a YouTube that you can call anonymous. I could talk to you off the net, like just to help a lot of veterans not commit suicide. We have a high right now. It's pretty bad.
Okay, I know we do. So you say you have a veteran podcast. So how can people find that?
It's called Real Talk, Real Scars. And that's pretty much where it just vulnerability. I just set it up because I just lost another battle buddy, unfortunately.
To suicide?
Yes. Actually, you do know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, we ain't gonna say the name, but
damn. Oh yeah, I'm not gonna say the name, but yeah. So that actually gave me the, you know, that was it. So I kind of.
Yeah, I know, man. I think I remember you posted that, but yeah. So sad. I remember too when I was in Korea. This guy, right, the young private, and like with a defect. And he was happy that day. Smiling and happy that day. And then the next day he didn't come to work. Somebody went to his room. The guy hung himself.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And break my heart. That's what I always say, right? Mm-hmm. Talk to people, right? If it feels a way, it's good to really, you know what I'm saying, talk to someone, right?
Yep.
Yes, yes, yes. So, what does resilient mean to you? I do believe that you are a very, very resilient person, man. Because I've seen that in your journey over the years. So talk to me.
Yes, I feel like just being resilient is just being able to overcome anything you're faced with and just never giving up. So as long as you just like how I always learned, I know my grandma had this little Jesus quote. And it was like, you're walking in the sand. And it was like, oh, Lord, you know, why are there two footsteps when you're not here with me? Like two sets of prints. And then the Lord was like, I'm always walking with you no matter what. So I kind of took that to heart. Like, okay, like, that's my motto.
Gotcha. That's real good right there. And if someone listening today, right, is going through a difficult time, whether it's illness, transition, or self-doubt, what would you say to them?
I would want to tell them, hey, you know, thank you, because if you're hearing this, that means you still have a heartbeat. And I want to tell them that there's nothing in this world that you can't get over. So don't believe what, if you have an illness, don't believe what the doctors say. Like they told me, I would never, you know, be able to live again. Like I was supposed to die 3 years ago multiple times, and I still beat it. So always believe in yourself and just don't give up. Like, and just keep pushing.
I understand that. Keep pushing. Yeah. So, when people, right, I got a last question real quick. So when people look back on your life, one day, what do you hope they remember most?
I want them to say she lived her life. I want them to say that no matter what, she always overcame adversity and she was always a kind person.
Got you. You know, we have a couple minutes left. About 8 minutes left before the podcast ends a little bit. So, let me ask you this. So, do you say you don't regret when you joined the military? So, do you actually miss it?
I do miss the military. I miss knowing what I want to do every day. I miss having that guaranteed paycheck. Yes, I get the VA paycheck, but it ain't the same.
Yeah.
I just miss the friendship. You know, I just miss like, yeah, we were always in competition with our peers, but. You know what I'm saying? We would never go out of too much way. You know, like to sabotage. Like, okay, I might put my hand out in front of you on a PT test and you get a couple seconds behind me or something. But, you know what I'm saying? Like, I just miss that family feeling because, unfortunately, I lost a lot of family in the military. So I do miss that family feeling.
Yeah, I understand that, too. I'm the same way, too. You know, I retired. First of all, when did you get out? What year?
I got out 2020. I got out the day COVID started.
For real?
May 20th, 2020.
You got off? Oh, my goodness.
I got out the last day when they shut everything out.
Yeah.
And the only reason I got a signature because I literally was, like, banging on the door and, like, crying. And then she signed it for me. Like, they was closing. Like, I was going, yep.
Wow. Hey, I'm going to tell you something right now. I know I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. COVID, kind of, just like you, I got medical discharge from the military, right? But luckily, I made it my 20 years. And I got to be honest with you. COVID saved me. I ain't like saving from actually not meeting my 20 years because when everything shut down, right? Because my retirement was supposed to be March. And they wanted to get rid of me by November.
Mm.
So I would have been short my 20 years by 4 months. And I would never have got my retirement. So.
But I'm glad you made it, too. You
deserve it. Thank you very much. I'm glad because the damn doctor told me that, you know what I mean? Because I ain't lying to you. Sometimes I'm glad I did it. Okay, because I got discharged because I'm diabetic now, right? And And I didn't know that the army could kick you out if you're diabetic, right? Yeah. I know at the time because I've seen people with one eye, one arm, still in. You know what I mean? When I was in, where was I at? Fort Drum. I knew a couple people that the car got out, but they're still in. I'm like, I can still do my job. I can still run. I can do everything. Thing. But yet, the medical discharged me, and I'm not lying to you, the daggone COVID actually saved me from me meeting my 20 years, because by the November, I should have gotten out, man. And I'm kind of worried, like, damn, I said, all the damn time, 20 daggone years, almost 20 years, and this is what I'm going to it kind of break my heart, man. It really did hurt my feelings, because I was trying to make E8. You know what I mean? That was my plan, to make E8, Master Sergeant. I really wanted to make it. And I, even to this day, sometimes I feel that I got robbed from that. Because at least I wanted to see if I could make it up. Yep. You know, because it's around the same time when the E8 board was coming up. Right? You know what I mean? I got my everything ready together, my uniform and everything, but make sure my all my my NCAR was good. You know what I mean? And I was ready. I'm like, damn. So I would never know if I was going to make it or not.
Yeah, I wouldn't know because Bragg did me dirty. Like, right before the board, I got flagged for my med board.
Oh, yeah, they flagged you?
Yes, the day before the board.
Damn.
So when they pulled my ERB, I was flagged.
Wow. Yeah, I think I was flagged, too. Yeah, because they flag you when you get medical discharge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'll flag my dad himself, man. You know what I mean? And that's kind of hurtful, because sometimes you put all this time in. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. All this time in serving your country. You know what I mean? And I saw this one guy, right? With a drum. And his Humvee got blown up. But he was fine, though. And he sure got a Purple Heart. And the only reason why he didn't get Purple Heart because he was flagged. I think for PT or something. And something?
Yeah.
Because this young man almost got blew up. The little got blew up. The Humvee got blew up. You can't say, don't call this damn kid the flag. You know, you're not going to give this damn kid a Purple Heart.
I seen a lot of kids that were supposed to get Purple Hearts that didn't get them, but the officers did. I was like,
exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, kids. Like, y'all deserved it too.
Exactly. That's sad to me, man, that some people, you know what I'm saying, they take it some, you know what I mean? But other than that, though, you know what I'm saying? We both, you know what I'm saying, love the military no matter what, right? We still love the military.
I went airborne, so I was good. You know, I made my mark.
Really? Yeah. So let me ask you, airborne, right? How was it when you first jumped off the dagger airplane, right? Were you afraid?
I freaked out. I cried. Every time I went to the door, I felt like I had to do number 3, 2, 1, and 2. I cried every jump. I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, woe is me. No. I was at Bragg. They used to sing the, what's it called? Bloody, what a way to die. Crash. It's like some movie or something. So yeah. They used to sing it.
Bloody Mary.
It's like I'm about to poop. Like, no, I loved it. So like when you get out the plane, it's amazing. Quiet. It's like you see everything is serene for like that 1 minute. The world does not matter. It's amazing. But once you start getting that whiff and you know, here it goes, you're like,
Damn.
But I loved it. I definitely always wanted to be in 82nd. I always wanted to be airborne. I felt like if you had that patch, you had it. I just saw it twice. So I made it.
Wow. I lied to you. I remember I went to airborne school too after AIT, right? And I didn't make it, man. I didn't make it. I missed my damn PT test by like 5 seconds. I was so mad. They couldn't even give me five. I even told them that I saw the airborne, right? I said, saw airborne. Give me one more chance, because I know I could pass the damn PT test. But they only give me one chance to take the damn PT test in airborne school. And you know what, that really hurt my feelings.
Yeah, I only made it because a soldier there. Like, she's still in, though.
Oh, she's still in?
Yeah, one of my best friends, like, Corsi. Yeah, her name, Corsi Finneson. Yeah. Was like, girl, let's go. Like we got to make the runs. Y'all know I can't run.
I know. When you told me earlier that they weren't slow there, Bragg, that just shocked the hell out of me.
It's torture. You run everywhere. So they give you the good greens and grits and honey biscuits and you eat so good. And guess what? As soon as you're done, go run. You be like, run. Run. So picture running on a full belly. You be like, I'm about to throw up. You like,
Hey, it's about the time, Stokes, Jamisha, and I want to tell you something right now. Trouble, I thank you for your service. And I really, really appreciate you coming on my show and talking to me. And I think we just had a great conversation. Thank you so much, okay?
No problem. Thank you for having me. Have a good day. Guys.
Have a good day. Thank you so much. Thank
you. You're tuned into Common Ground with Valentine Harris, only on LA Talk Radio.